Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
So we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
Yes, we did. We went digging into the ground and we started to burn many things we found. This is that's the great Dar Williams singing with the even a more amazing Pete Seeger, now 93 years old. Just saw him on Colbert, actually. If you want to see Pete Seeger live and on the networks, Google Stephen Colbert. He just had Pete on. Pete sang a song, and they had a cute little talk there. Pete is truly astounding. He has sung the Solartopia song for me with David Burns and Dar Williams that you heard opening the show. We have an amazing show, the first of two. We have a two-part series here with the great Greg Palast. I am actually looking at his Occupy film on my screen here, although I can't play the... Hello? Well, I hear music in the background.
That's me.
Oh, hey, Greg. How are you? This is Greg Palast on the line. How are you, man? Where are you?
I'm sitting on the beach. Eat your heart out.
I am eating my heart out.
You're in Cleveland. I mean, you know, what evil god has dropped you in Cleveland?
Yeah, I've been asking
what happened to you, Harvey? What did you do in your last life that they dumped you in Ohio, where all they do is steal votes and collect unemployment checks from the closed steel plants?
Yes, you're right about that, Greg.
Evil. It's
now, one
so
small,
sad.
One
it's
small
so
correction.
Don't
well, I think what the actually the problem is that I did many good things in my previous lifetime, and so the powers that be dropped me in Columbus, actually, not Cleveland. I'm not on the lake. Unfortunately, I like the lake. But I'm in Columbus.
Oh, my God, you're in Cleveland.
No,
you realize
Columbus.
That my buddy Larry Flint.
Yeah, Larry Flint.
Had to went into exile, left Cleveland, went into exile to Los Angeles because he had to just leave Columbus. It's terrible. I worked in Columbus for you had a governor there, Dick Celeste.
Yes.
And he had just a tiny bit of soul. Not a lot, a tiny bit.
Yeah.
And the powers that be decided to eat him for lunch because he had just a bit of soul. He cared about people just a little bit, not a lot, not overwhelming. He wasn't like a, you know, he wasn't Thomas Jefferson, but, of course, Thomas Jefferson wasn't Thomas Jefferson. But, damn. So I worked for Celeste, and I flew to Columbus. I fly to Columbus every month or so, advising him on the evil of the Zimmer nuclear plant, which then became a coal plant, which then became just a pile of dust. And am I just kind of wandering about, Harvey? You have to control me. This is Greg Palast reporting for Harvey Wasserman, and boy, does that make me happy.
Well, Greg Palast is one of my great buddies and one of the great investigative reporters and next week in the world, and next week we will be talking. We're going to have two shows with Greg. Today's the first. We're going to talk about Occupy mostly today and Greg's other work.
Harvey,
and then next week.
Six shows, not just two.
All right, we'll do
okay.
So. Next
don't
week, we'll talk
me,
about
that. Don't jack with me. Go ahead.
Well, I have to relook at your contract. I think we picked you up on waivers from the Red Sox,
right,
as a matter of fact. So we are going to talk today about Occupy and Vulture's Picnic and the Rich and Powerful and all of Greg's previous work. And then next week, we are going to talk specifically and in great detail about stolen elections, which is one of which is about to come up. So we will deal with that. I've read a piece. In fact, I'm using a piece of Greg's upcoming book, Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, with a foreword by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., which will be coming out in our own book. My book with Bob Fitrakis is going to be coming out as an e-book within a couple of days. We're calling that, Will the GOP Steal America's 2012 election.
By the way, where do people get that? Where do people get that? Because I've read it, and I want people to listen up. Listen up. If you're in a car, pull over, because I don't want you to write this down or, you know, while you're driving, because it's, like, dangerous. And you might kill my kids or, you know, I don't like that. Pull over. Harvey Wasserman and Bob Fitrakis, who are the closest things we have to living angels on this planet, have written a book. It's e-book only, and it's called Will the GOP Steal, right, 2012? Is that what it's called?
That's correct.
That's correct? Okay.
It's a sequel to How the GOP Stole America's 2004 Election.
Okay. And, you know, and so this book, I got to tell you, I want people to go to, what's the site, Harvey? Where do they go?
Well, freepress.org and harveywasserman.com.
Freepress.org, you know, even if you're driving, you remember that, freepress.org, okay, because there's not much free press left, so it's quite unique. Freepress.org. And I want you to download this book. It's like, you're charging like nothing for it, right?
We're going to charge 99 cents. It should be up tomorrow, actually.
99 cents if you're one of the 99%. Now, if you're one
exactly
of the
right.
1%, you have to pay $25,000 for it to download it. But if you're one of the 99%, you get it for 99 cents. Will the GOP steal the 2012 election? And I want to tell you, I wrote the introduction to it because I was so excited by it, and I want to tell people this. And it's very, very important. I want people to go to your site. And I know that it's not up right this second. And I bet if they go to your site and just send you a message, when it comes out, Harvey, send it to me. I'll give you your 99 frickin' cents. Because this book is astonishing. And one of the things, and I'm rarely shocked. This is Greg Pallas. You know, I'm the guy that figured out that Catherine Harris knocked off tens of thousands of black voters in Florida in 2000. She called them felons. Felons. Criminals. Their only crime was voting while black. That was how we got Bush elected. It was a coup d'etat. It was a coup d'etat. Let me just explain. It was a coup d'etat, right? And we're just sitting there going, yeah, yeah, well, that's the rules. Coup d'etats. It was a coup d'etat, all right? Now, Harvey's written a book telling me something horrendous, shocking, horrible. One of the things is he's a historian. I don't know how many people listening to this program realize that Harvey is like a registered, qualified, official historian, and he explained that elections have been stolen since King George. Thomas Jefferson had won because he had the election fixed. Now, I love Tommy, but he fixed it too. They're all in the game, man. And if you don't get Will the GOP Steal 2012 from Harvey Wasserman, Bob Fitrakis, then just don't talk to me. I don't want this Greg Pallas. I don't want to know you. I don't want to know your mommy. I don't want to see you. I want nothing to do. I don't want you to buy my books, and that's really difficult to say.
Well, let's talk about your book. What's the title of your book?
We're going to talk about my books, and I have a DVD out because I know that people are now post-literate. So I have a DVD. Go ahead.
Yeah, and your DVD is...
Say something wonderful about it, because you only got it a few minutes ago, but I hope you at least looked at the trailer.
Well, first of all, I love your hat. It's called Why We Occupy. Why We Occupy with Greg Pallas. And do you have a book by the same name, Greg?
No, I don't, but I have a book called Vulture's Picnic.
Let's talk about Vulture's Picnic for a minute here. Thank you for the plug of How the GOP Stole America's 2012 Election. That will be available in an e-book within a couple of days, maybe even tomorrow, from freepress.org and harveywasserman.com. Now, Vulture's Picnic is published by whom, and what's it about?
Well, it's published by this pig publisher called Penguin, which is owned, and I kid you not, I can't make this up, it's owned by the Gaddafi family.
No.
Yeah.
What's
what? The biggest publisher in the world. They are the 1% publishers, but they let me in, and then I wrote this book, and boy, does that make them unhappy. They wish that I never happened. They wish that my mother got killed in World War II when she was a spar, because they bought this book from me, and then I gave them a book called Vulture's Picnic, which they don't like because it's about, it names and shames the 1%. It gets inside them. Now, for those who don't know Greg Pallas, I am an investigative reporter. which I know under Patriot Act 3 is not allowed in the United States of America, but I do it for BBC television out of London. And what I did was I went inside, staked out, got the inside documents, got the inside information on the vultures, the financial jackals who have seized this nation. And by the way, and this is very important, it'll be my next book, in Vultures Picnic, these vultures have now become the number one donors for Mittens Romney. Now, I'm not partisan, but I just want to let you know who these guys are, because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I don't care whether you vote for Mittens or you vote for Tiger Wuss or... Am I allowed to say that on the air, or am I going to get a lot of crap on Facebook?
What does Mitt actually stand for?
He stands for them.
No, Mitt, the name. Where does the name come from?
I thought it was Mittens. Mittens, I just assumed, you know, but I don't know. I mean, Mittens Romney, that's what I thought was his real name, but it isn't.
I don't know. I thought he
was one that he stole the mittens from the kittens, right?
Yeah,
the guy stole the mittens from the kittens and said he was creating jobs.
Yeah.
He's a job creator. I don't want to hear any crap about Mittens from you, Harvey, today,
right?
Because he's a job creator, and you're just, you know, you're Mr. Solar Power.
Right.
You know, you think that the sun is going to create jobs. When what creates jobs is coal and filth and the planet baking like an apple pie.
And also,
right?
Attacking other countries. That's a really big job creator for the United States.
Well, you
attacking
know,
other
yeah.
countries.
Well, look, the war economy is very... You know, Harvey, I'm sorry. We went into Iraq. You have to understand. As Thomas Friedman, the great globalizer himself...
Yeah, well, Thomas Friedman of the New York Times, one of the great blowhards of our era.
Well, come on, Harvey, be kind. You know, he's as he pointed out, someone's got to control the oil of Iraq, and it ought to be us. And
it is. You know, it is our oil.
But you know,
it
does create jobs, because if you don't send your kid to Fallujah, you know, it's not like he's going to get a job in computer science. You think your schools can compete with those in Bangalore? I've been there.
You've been to Bangalore?
Yeah, I've been to Bangalore. In fact, I was in Kerala.
How are the schools in Bangalore?
Well, let me tell you. Let me give you a little story. That's what I do. I give little stories. Greg Palast. People who know Greg Palast, go to gregpalast.com. Download Why We Occupy, which is my DVD and all this stuff. It's great. It's brilliant. I'm sure Harvey would tell you that if he actually saw it. But
I'm watching it right now, but I can't.
You're watching
can't
it right
sound.
Now.
I am.
You have? Are you unzipped, Harvey? It's very sensual. Now, and there's a trailer at gregpalast.com of Why We Occupy. But I went to Kerala, which is the state in southern India, and I went to a fishing village, and they had all these guys in dugout logs. I kid you not. I mean, their boats were literally dugout logs with sails made out of sheets that were sewed together. And they came in with their catch in the morning. They had no electricity in this village. And in the afternoon, they would sit there with cardboard cutouts of computer keyboards, cardboard cutouts because they had no electricity. And they would learn to program apps for Microsoft. And these fishermen with the dugout logs and no electricity were computer whizzes. So your kids ain't going to compete with that. You can forget it.
No,
so
we're screwed.
What we have to do is, and Mittens Romney knows this, and so one thing you have to respect about Mittens, he understands the post-employment America, okay? Post-employment America, in which there's a few who get what they need, and the rest of us who kind of serve and provide what they need. Now, at the beginning, you know, in Vultures, in Why We Occupy, I talk about, I'm going to tell you this because I don't think you've had a chance to see it yet.
Right. You're
there's
right.
a guy
no,
named,
tell our listeners.
I was, you know, many years ago, before I was an investigative reporter, Harvey's one of the few people who knows that I was an investigator, a real detective, like a gumshoe, before I was an investigative reporter. And one of the cases I was on was theft of oil from an Indian reservation, Oklahoma. Sounds like really dull and an awful job, and it was. And we had to figure out what was happening. These guys are coming around with trucks, pulling oil out of the oil wells owned by these really poor Indians in Oklahoma. And the FBI was with me. We filmed these guys, and we followed the trucks back to where they came from. And it went to a loading dock. And there was this big white guy standing on the loading dock, big tall white guy with gray hair, prematurely gray hair. And he was saying, I want more. And if these guys didn't take more oil, steal more oil from the Indians, they would lose their jobs. I want more. And his name, by the way, is Charles Koch. Charles
K-O-C-H.
K-O-C-H.
One of the infamous Koch brothers. Who's in the process of buying the 2012 election?
Harvey, you got to stop that. They're job creators.
Oh, okay.
Charles and David, his brother, are each worth $20 billion. Their other brothers, which people tend to ignore because they're the poor relations, Bill and Fred Jr. are worth about $3 billion each.
And they're on welfare.
They're all on welfare actually. But Charles. We had one of his senior executives wired. And one of the senior executives asked Koch, who was already a billionaire when we were investigating this about 1995. One of his executives asked Koch when he said, you know, why are you stealing oil from, basically, why are you stealing oil from, you know, a bunch of Indians? I mean, you're getting basically $30 from each of these families in mobile homes. And remember, Koch, Charles Koch, was already a multi-billionaire. So why was he standing in Oklahoma on a loading dock telling truckers to steal oil from Indians?
Because he could never have enough. His mother didn't love him. You know what Koch said?
You know, I'm going to give you a quote because I have it on tape. I have it on tape,
okay.
Harvey, in Why We Occupy. Koch said to his executive, he said, I want my fair share, and that's all of it.
That's cool. Didn't they make a movie about him called Citizen Kane?
Yeah.
Orson Welles?
That Orson Welles, he was a guy, you know, in Citizen Kane, you had a guy who actually came up from nowhere and had talent. The Koch brothers, as I explain in Why We Occupy, if you want to download this film, it's at www.gregpalast.com. That's GREGPALAST.com. Harvey's too impolite to mention that. Now listen, gregpalast.com. You go to Why We Occupy, you'll find out that Charles Koch, unlike Citizen Kane, who at least had talent and worked his way up and, you know, took over the media.
I'll email you the number I'm looking for.
Yeah, yeah. So when Koch got his money the old-fashioned way, his daddy gave it to him. He inherited billions from Fred Koch Sr., who made billions by building refineries, oil refineries for Joe Stalin. I kid you not. Came back and formed the anti-communist John Birch Society, the red-baiting crazy John Birch Society, ultra-right wing. Gave billions to his kids, left billions to his kids. So when Charles Koch was stealing oil from Indians, he was already worth billions because he got it, you know, like I say, the old-fashioned way, getting it from daddy, or I should say, given his father, the old fascist way. And
well, Greg, let me ask you a quick question. I saw, not to interrupt, but this is certainly relevant.
Go ahead.
It said that there's a disproportionate percentage of millionaires and billionaires who are sociopaths. Would you characterize these rich guys, the one percenters, as sociopaths?
No, we are.
We're the sociopaths.
Yes, you and me, Harvey. Because we sit here earning, you know, basically
nothing.
Bupkis. Nothing. Nothing.
Uh-huh.
If we're lucky, maybe some groupie lays some skin on us. But that's about it. That's our reward. And these guys have bought it up. Kochs are worth, you know, the four Koch brothers together are worth nearly 50 billion dollars. $50 billion. Okay, Paul the Vulture Singer, when I talk about Why We Occupy, when I talk about BP, these are billion-dollar corporations. These are billionaires, and you and I are sitting here trying to, you know, pee-pee on them by telling the truth, you know, basically golden shower with the facts. And what's our reward? Paul Singer has his private jet. I know because a friend of mine took a ride on to his ski chalet in Vail. He has his private jet. He's got his place at the penthouse on 86th Street. He's got more homes than God. And, you know, they've got it figured. So are they they understand sociopaths are people who are opposed the social norm. They set the social norm. We're the sociopaths. We're the out. You know, Bobby Kennedy, I just spoke to him. He describes me as an outlier, a guy outside. And you are too. You know,
yeah, we're
Kennedy.
Outliers.
You know, he's a big. By the way, Bobby Kennedy is a freaking giant fan of yours because he knows that you're an outlier. You are sociopathic, thank God, because we don't agree with what society has bought into.
As opposed to a Mittens Romney, who's an inlier.
Yeah.
There you go. There's a new phrase you can use, an inlier.
Can I steal that?
You absolutely. It's all yours. But, you know,
okay.
I'm talking with Greg Palast here, author of Vulture's Picnic, the star of the film Occupy.
Why We Occupy. It's basically, I just want to warn people, it's my talk to on Why We Occupy, interlaced with all my films from my investigations from BBC around the world, from the Arctic to the Amazon to Azerbaijan to the Congo to deepest, darkest New York. And I also, for those who actually have bought the book, Vulture's Picnic, which I encourage you to read because I like it. And I didn't write it just for my mommy to read it. Vulture's Picnic. Every chapter of Vulture's Picnic, 15 chapters, is a video that goes with it. It will be in this. Even if you don't read the book, you'll find it quite cool.
Well, I love Vulture's Picnic. As I recall, I wrote a review of it. And nobody skewers the rich and famous better than Greg Palast. We're talking with Greg Palast here, author of Vulture's Picnic. And, Greg, what is the message here from the Koch brothers? What are the Koch brothers trying to do to America and their fellow rich people? And, of course, you know, Mitt Romney is probably just a mere billionaire, so he's not really in their class, I suppose. But what are these guys trying to do to America? Why can't they be content and happy with their paltry $50 billion? What motivates the 1% to get richer and richer?
It's Koch's own phrase. And, by the way, I do want to remind you that Koch did say, if you just tuned in, that Charles Koch did say on tapes, the tape recordings I have, I want my fair share, and that's all of it. So the fact that he has $50 billion is quite short of all of it. So who is Mittens Romney? And who is Barack Obama, Tiger Woods?
Well, I think actually both Mitt Romney and Barack Obama are holograms. I'm not convinced they're real people.
Now, but very, very important. This is it. And if those who read Vulture's Picnic and then my next book, which we'll discuss next week, Billionaires and Ballot Bans, go to GregPalast.com and get all this stuff. By the way, just so you, for people who know, is that while I'm not making a lot of money on this, I've made a decision not to make any money on this. It's all these proceeds go to a 501c3 charity called the Palast Investigative Fund for the dying art of investigative reporting. Now, there's a big split in the elite right now, Harvey.
In the elite, yeah.
The bankers, the establishment bankers like Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, Citibank, who back Obama, and the kind of cowboy vultures like Paul the Vulture Singer and the Koch brothers and others who are backing Romney because...
Abrahamson guy, right, in Nevada. Yeah. He's the one with all the big casinos.
Yeah, Adelson, by the
Adelson,
way, Adam, you know, this is a very interesting, you'll love this, Harvey. Adelson runs around with a yarmulke on his head, and he went with Romney to Israel, and he runs around saying, I'm going to give $100 million. Can you imagine? Nixon's creepy creep campaign for re-election spent $100 million, and people thought that was shocking. This guy's going to give $100 million, $100 million just himself for the Romney campaign. Now you think, oh, my God, he must really care about the nation of Israel, right? He cares about what's going to happen to that embattled nation. Come on. You know who blew the whistle on him, of all people? Because he's kind of dotty and he's in a bad mood? John McCain. John McCain said, Adelson doesn't care about Israel. The money comes. He is just laundering money. He's a conduit of money. And this is from John McCain. I kid you not. Adelson is a conduit of money from China.
China.
When people say Adelson is a casino magnet, yes, he has the Sands Casino in the U.S., which loses money. You know, Frank Sinatra hasn't been there in a very long time at the Sands. Sammy Davis Jr. is dead. They don't make a dime in Las Vegas. But that gives him a technical foothold with a casino in the USA. All his money, 100% of Adelson's money, comes from his operations, his casinos in Macau. And he was the one designated. Every con artist, corporation, you name it, the mob, everyone wanted to have a Chinese casino. Can you imagine? Because of the Chinese cultural thing about gambling. So it's a license to print billions.
Okay, Adelson, well, Greg, we're going to have to take a break.
Yeah, I'm just telling you why Adelson got the casino and where the money's coming from.
Well, let's talk about that when you come back. We're talking with the great Greg Palast, the first of two shows. Today we're talking about the 1% and the Occupy movement and so much else. We're going to hear the Soratopia song. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Got Greg, take a breather, get a drink. We got another great half hour to go. Call in at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Soulertopia Rocky Top version. We're on with Greg Palast. Before we proceed, Greg, I have to do my usual commercial interruption here and talk about what's happening with the nuclear power industry. We have a criminal prosecution going on in Japan right now. The Tokyo District Public Prosecutor's Office, two other district prosecutor's offices have filed five criminal complaints against the management of TEPCO, Tokyo Electric Power Company, owner of the seething radioactive wreck and the apocalyptic nightmare that is Fukushima today. Criminal prosecution there, and I have posted a piece at freepress.org. It's also a Counterpunch and a number of other websites, BuzzFlash, reviewing a new book by Cecile Pineda on called The Devil's Tango about Fukushima. Highly recommended. That review is at freepress.org, and it's making its way around the Internet, as pieces tend to do sometimes. And we also have some amazing news today from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which we generally refer to as No Real Chance or Nobody Really Cares. The commission has granted the motion of the Seabrook licensed renewal interveners, in other words, the people, the good guys, Friends of the Coast, New England Coalition, Vermont, other nuclear interveners, have asked the NRC to suspend all licensing decisions dependent on the agency's waste confidence rule. That means basically the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has been issuing re-licenses, license extensions to the 104 or so, one by one, nuclear reactors in this country on the presumption that there would be a solution for the nuclear waste situation. However, the federal courts have intervened, and a very complicated ruling but throws the future of waste management, nuclear waste management, into even deeper doubt in this country. In other words, what the hell are we going to do with this stuff? And nobody has the slightest idea. And the NRC today has actually acknowledged that fact and may have a change in how they're relicensing these reactors. In other words, they may actually suspend relicensing. Interviewers were jubilant following today's NRC notice of a decision. It's not often that people who intervene against the nuclear power industry in this country have reason to be jubilant, but today we have that. So take a look. I'm going to be posting that at nukefree.org. But the number one thing, the number one message of this piece, which I have posted at freepress.org and nukefree.org and elsewhere, is that at Fukushima, and Greg Palast is well familiar with this, I'm sure, there is a spent fuel pool flying in the air. It's 100 feet up. It's at Unit 4, which was actually not operating at the time of the disaster last March 11th. But a hydrogen explosion and the earthquake and tsunami weakened the structure that supports the spent fuel pool at Fukushima. And as a result, this spent fuel pool, with more than 1,500 fuel rods in it, is perched 100 feet in the air and could come crashing down. Certainly with any kind of seismic shock, these spent fuel rods could go crashing to the ground. They would catch fire because they're clad in zirconium alloy, which the geniuses who built nuclear power plants decided to use for cladding on fuel rods. This stuff catches fire when it's exposed to air. If, God forbid, this fuel pool and its 1,500 rods crash to the ground, they will catch fire. And the radioactive cloud that will float out will threaten all life on Earth, except maybe the cockroaches. But the human race doesn't have much of a chance of this happening. So the title of the piece I've posted today is "The Devil Still Has Us Death Dancing in Fukushima." It's about this wonderful book. Very hard to read. It's easy to read, but it's very disturbing. "The Devil's Tango: How I Learned the Fukushima Step by Step" by Cecile Pineda. She's actually touring around right now. But take a look at freepress.org and nukefree.org. It'll ruin your day, but we need to be informed. Speaking of which, we are back with Greg Palast. We're talking about the psychotic super rich. Greg, you've got another story about one of the infamous Koch brothers, I'm sure.
Well, actually, let me back up, because I thought that your report was a perfect tie-in for my commercial purposes of selling my DVD, Why We Occupy, at gregpalast.com, which you can download. Because I read this inside document. I want you to listen to this, Harvey.
I'm listening.
Quote, Wiesel was very upset. He seemed very nervous, very agitated. In fact, the plant was riddled with problems that no way on earth could stand an earthquake. The team of engineers sent in to inspect found that most of the components would completely and utterly fail during an earthquake. That, Harvey, is a document I show, and in fact you get the actual document itself, on Why We Occupy, which I just released today. This is today.
You are
the man releasing it worldwide. And what that is before I was, for those who don't know Greg Palast, I was an investigator before I was an investigative reporter, and I was in charge of the investigation of the nuclear industry for the federal government. We went in and got some companies that were racketeers, a company called Stone & Webster. Jury award is $4.3 billion. That was one of the documents that came out of that. I read that on Why We Occupy. Show it to you. It turns out that the nuclear industry, and here's the key thing, faked the earthquake-proofing test. It's called seismic qualification. That was not only an ugly idea, a dangerous idea, but the engineer the reason it says that this guy Wiesel, who was the engineer in charge of testing earthquake proofing, was nervous and upset, was not because people would die at Fukushima or in New York or in Ohio. He was upset because he was being asked to break the law and pretend that these plants could withstand an earthquake when they couldn't. And we saw it at Fukushima. These plants are supposed, you know, they said, oh, my God, it was a 9.0 earthquake. Who could have expected that? Well, Harvey, you know, and this is in Vulture's Picnic and Why We Occupy, it was 9.0 earthquake in the middle of the freaking Pacific Ocean. By the time it hit Fukushima, it was between, 7 and 8 on the Richter scale. It was less than what was supposed to be the design structure of the Fukushima plant. In other words, the Fukushima plant was designed to withstand an earthquake at least as large as hit it, and it didn't, because they faked the tests, they lied to their regulators in Japan, which used, by the way, the U.S. standards, because they don't have much of an agency themselves, so they simply adopt U.S. standards. They lied. People died because they lied, not because of some earthquake. They are always blaming Mother Nature. Oh, it was a big earthquake, and it was a tsunami. Listen, let me tell you something, Harvey, as I explained in Why We Occupy in that film. It wasn't the tsunami which flooded. Then when those plants go down because they can't withstand the earthquake because they lied about that, at least the emergency diesel generators are supposed to kick in, but they lied about those too. They told us that the emergency diesel generators were flooded by the tsunami. Baloney. Look at the Google Earth maps and pictures. Those things were barely wet. The problem was that they didn't work. The reason why the emergency diesel generators failed at Fukushima, failed at the Shoreham nuclear plant, which we got closed, failed all over America, is that those plants, those diesel generators, don't work in an emergency. You turn them on, they commit suicide. They're old cruise ship engines, which are not meant to go from 0 to 120 knots in 6 seconds. They've got 12 seconds to get to 20,000 RPM. They do that, and they crack. Any engineer listening to this will know this. You can't go from dead cold, we've been turned off for months, to 12 seconds at double full power without destroying themselves. And that's what they did at Fukushima, and that's why it's a fraud, it's a lie. Fukushima is not a natural disaster site. It is a crime scene, Harvey. Go to gregpalace.com, download Why We Occupy, get the documents, get the facts, and then come back to Harvey and get his book, because they can't get away with this crap unless they also steal the elections to let them get away with this crap. And that's why America, we just want to give you a Nobel Prize in truth, Harvey. I just have to give you the Nobel Prize in truth. And you can have any blonde on my staff for 20 minutes if your wife doesn't mind.
Okay, well, listen, Greg, what you're saying is really important because, among other things, this new book, The Devil's Tango, and you know this too, documents very clearly that what really caused the Fukushima disaster was the earthquake. And that the tsunami came later, but the meltdowns were already in progress because of the earthquake. And
that's correct.
Why this is important is because the nuclear industry says, well, this can't happen at Indian Point or Seabrook or other places, Perry in Ohio or
San Onofre
South
in
Texas.
California! Oh, we're not going to have a dangerous earthquake in California!
Right. But what they're saying is that Fukushima only happened because of the tsunami, and this can't happen elsewhere. But the fact of the matter is that the plant was destroyed by the earthquake.
Yes.
And the tsunami came in and did all sorts of horrific nightmare damage. But the fact of the matter is that the triple meltdown at Fukushima and the spent fuel pool flying in the air 100 feet up. This is a design problem. And there are 23 of these reactors in the United States, and God knows how many worldwide, and they're all vulnerable to earthquakes.
Don't listen to this if you want to sleep tonight. If you download Why We Occupy at GregPalace.com, you'll find out this. The company that faked the earthquake proofing test is called Stone & Webster. I put this information about faking the earthquake proofing test in front of a federal jury in New York, which found Stone & Webster guilty of racketeering. Okay, hit them and their co-conspirators for $4 billion and put them out of business. However, as you know, Harvey, corporations are shape shifters. Stone and Webster, instead of just dying like the rest of us and being put in a coffin and forgotten, they were turned into a company called Shaw Construction. Shaw Construction has been asked to rebuild Fukushima and to build, listen to this, the Obama administration has authorized four nuclear plants, new nuclear plants in the United States, the first time in 30 years. All four plants will be built by Shaw Construction. These are the guys that my jury found guilty of lying about earthquake proofing, about lying about the emergency diesels, about lying about the construction of the safety and cost of nuclear plants. These are the guys designated to build all four nuclear plants approved by the Obama administration. Those are the good guys, I guess.
Yeah, and, right.
But what I'm saying is, look, shafting the public is a bipartisan activity, is number one. And two, nuclear power, as Bobby Kennedy says, is the power from hell when we have power from the heavens. And I know you're a voice in the wilderness, Harvey. Those who read my book, Vulture's Picnic, will encounter a character named Harvey Angel. Harvey Angel is my name for Harvey Wasserman because he is an angel. I've outed him. I know he's been sent from heaven, and therefore, and I've exposed your secret, Harvey, but you've been sent from heaven to save this sorry planet. And for those listening to this show who will act on it, understand you have heavenly power behind you. If you want to know that story, go to gregpalace.com, get Vulture's Picnic, the book, or get Why We Occupy. I'm selling this stuff very strongly because it all goes to my foundation, and we'll keep taking, and I will help. It's very important to me to get Harvey's message out of Ohio and into this sad, sick, diseased planet controlled by vultures, radiation salesmen, and, you know, the most devious, evil, banking scumbags, fraudsters, criminals, con men, and, you know,
well, so you've been describing the nuclear industry. We're talking with Greg Palast, gregpalast.com. I'm one of America's last and truly great investigative reporters. Greg, the Shaw Company, which is building the four reactors, two in South Carolina and two in Georgia, have concealed the fact that these reactors are all vulnerable to earthquakes.
Yes.
Is that what you're telling us?
I didn't just say it. I understand this is not just like Greg Powell's, you know, conspiracy nut. I'm a conspiracy expert. I charged them with conspiracy and racketeering for the federal government in front of the federal jury. We had a 10-week trial, and they were found guilty by a federal jury of lying about the earthquake-proofing safety tests, about the emergency diesel tests. You say, oh, well, what does that have to do with us? Every plant in the United States, in Japan, in Germany, everywhere in the world, depends when stuff goes wrong because they faked their earthquake proofing tests. When stuff goes wrong, those emergency diesel generators are supposed to work, pump in water, and stop this stuff from melting to hell. And they faked those tests too. A jury found them liable, charged them billions, put them out of business, and they are back building the nuclear plants of the United States of America. And they just changed their name. They became a unit, the nuclear unit of Shaw Construction, which is politically connected up the wazoo with everything, you know, like with Bobby Jindal of Louisiana, that mushmouth fraud. So this is the nuclear industry. I want people to know this stuff. I want people to know what Harvey Wasserman has done. People listen to your show. They haven't any idea the incredible stuff you have uncovered. They haven't any idea how courageous you've been and how much effort you've put in trying to get the brain-dead media of the United States. I've got a luxury. I work for BBC London. I can come up, when I do an investigative report, they put it on top of the nightly news. In America, Harvey Wasserman finds stuff that should win 7 Pulitzer Prizes. They won't even put him after a dog food commercial. I don't like this. Go to gregpalace.com, get the truth. Get the book Vulture's Picnic, in which Harvey Angel Wasserman is a star, and
well, Greg,
Why We Occupy. I'm selling his hard, Harvey,
well, Greg,
because
let's
you don't sell yourself enough, and I want people to know about you because you are an American hero, And I don't say that word very often. I don't get on a radio call on radio hosts, an American hero. Most of them are, you know, they're nice people, but they're, you know, they're not American heroes. They're not angels. They're not sent from heaven. You are, I want people to know about you, read Vultures, Picnic, get Why We Occupy, the DVD and film, at gregpalace.com. I'm selling it hard because I don't think that people have any idea who Harvey Wasserman is, and he is an American miracle.
Well, thank you. I hope my mother's listening up in heaven. She's cavelling, I'm sure. So, Greg Palace, tell us the full implications now at
yes.
Fukushima of the fact that the plant there and so many plants in the United States, nuclear plants, nuclear reactors, I hate to call them plants, are far more vulnerable to earthquake than we have been led to believe. We've had two earthquakes in the United States, two reactors in the United States, actually three, that have been damaged by earthquakes. The first one was at Perry in Ohio in 1986, January 31st, actually, the same time very soon after the Challenger blew up. How they managed to build a nuclear plant on an earthquake in Ohio is truly a feat of engineering imagination. And then within the last year or two, there was an earthquake in Virginia that actually cracked the Washington Monument. You know, you can't go into the Washington Monument anymore because it's been damaged by an earthquake. And that same earthquake did damage the two reactors at North Anna, Virginia. What you're saying now, and it's very important, and it's part of The Devil's Tango by Cecile Pineda, which I've got an article about at freepress.org today and nukefree.org, that we've been lied to at Fukushima, the world's largest disaster, human-made disaster, because we were told that it was largely the tsunami that caused it, and the reason that the nuclear industry wants us to hear about this is because, you know, so many other reactors may not be vulnerable to tsunami, but in fact it was an earthquake that did it. And it was a 9.0, and that 9.0 earthquake actually had its epicenter more than 100 miles away from Fukushima.
That's correct. So the point is, I called Harvey, I called the U.S. Geological Survey experts and said, okay, what is the actual movement at Fukushima? Not in the middle of the Pacific. I heard, Anderson Cooper out there, you know, when they, you know, he was at the gym when they gave out the facts, and he said, oh, well, that, you know, it's a big earthquake. There's nothing they could do about it. That was way out there. Just so you know. And I know you know it, but I want the listeners to know it. It's a little technical. But experts tend not to use Richter scale. That's more of a something you have in press releases. They use something called Galileos, which is Earth movement at a certain point. And the Fukushima plants were supposed to be set to withstand an earthquake of 600 Galileos under the plant. It never reached much more than 500 Galileos under those reactors. And these are logarithmic scales, so you have to understand that that's a huge, huge, huge difference. So in other words, these plants were designed to withstand the earthquake. They didn't. Why? Because the earthquake proofing was faked, as they've been faked in the United States. I was able to use this information to get the federal, state, and local governments to close a nuclear plant at Shoreham, New York. It operated one day, we closed it down as way too dangerous because we put it in front of a jury. But what freaked me out is that while the jury was only allowed to consider one plant, when in fact what this was a systemic operation by this company, now called a unit of Shaw, to fake nuclear safety proofing, and for a simple reason, it's the money. It's a lot of money to make a plant earthquake proof. But you have to, because if you had an earthquake and a solar tower fell down, and by the way, Harvey, you might be interested to know that there were solar towers in Fukushima. Did you see anyone on TV talking about the problem with the wind turbines?
No,
all the wind turbines
in Japan. There are many wind turbines in Japan, and not one of them went down. As a result
of the Fukushima earthquake. Some of them had trouble, but you didn't hear about, oh my God, we have to evacuate because a solar panel cracked. Oh no. No. So what happens is we are all in danger. And you know, you say, oh well, that's Japan. You know, you'll love this, Harvey. In Vulture's Picnic and in Why We Occupy the Film, I keep saying it, plugging it, for a reason. Because we say, oh, that's Japan over there. And we start hearing from the nuclear industry here and their propagandists, oh, well, that's the Japanese. You know, they don't know how to operate a nuclear plant. I got to tell you, the Obama administration gave a license to the South Texas plant, nuclear plant operators, nuclear reactor operators, to build two more reactors. They have a lousy record of safety. They have a lousy record of lying to the regulators. So this company said, don't worry, we will sell a hunk of our plant and turn over the complete control of construction operation to the best nuclear operator in the world, so you have nothing to worry about. And that nuclear operator that they've designated and that the Obama administration accepted is Tokyo Electric Power. The guys, you said, are now under criminal indictment for killing people in Japan. That's who the Obama administration and these con artists accepted. I know that Romney is evil, so I shouldn't mention the evils committed by Tiger Wuss. But I do want to, I have to be fair, I have to be straight. This is what's going down. Not that Romney said, oh my God, this stuff is too dangerous, let's not do it.
Right. You know, we're talking with Greg Powers. Greg, we're almost to the end here. I want you, in 2 minutes left, tell us why the one percenters, the Koch brothers, guys with billions and billions of dollars, why do they need more? Why do they keep screwing the public, trying to fight solar power, trying to steal elections? What is it that motivates these crazy, crazy people who for whom $50 billion each is not enough? Can you give us a thumbnail?
Yes,
Greg Powers will be back.
One
second. Yeah. Greg Powers will be back with us next week on the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show to talk about stolen elections. We each have books about them. And that full hour next week will be about stolen elections. But, Greg, tell us about the 1%. Give us a two-minute analytic.
In one phrase, they want to make mommy's monkey jump. If you read Vulture's Picnic, there's a story of one of these billionaires who's worth $7 billion, Steve Case, whose ex-wife talked to me. He said he went to – every week they went to dinner with his mommy, with his mother in Great Neck, who – and she would say to him, all I know is money makes the monkey jump. Money makes the monkey jump. And he would then leave the dinner, get into the car, and burst into tears because even with billions of dollars, he still hadn't made mommy's monkey jump. These guys are trying to make mommy's monkey jump. The Koch brothers were born with billions, and now they want, as Charles Koch said, I want my fair share, and that's all of it. Doesn't matter how it's done because it is, you should use the word sociopath. I don't know. I'm not a psychologist. I'm an economist. I'm an investigative reporter. And all I can tell you is they just want to make mommy's monkey jump. And if you, you know, like I said, see, actually, it's funny. See the story in Vulture's Picnic and watch it.
All right. Greg Powers, the hour flies by. Next week we'll be talking again with Greg Powers about billionaires and ballot bandits, and my own, will the GOP steal America's 2012 election? This has been a great hour with Greg Powers, author of Vulture's Picnic and the new Why We Occupy movie. We will be back next week. Thank you, Matt, and all the crew at PRN-FM. And we're going to roll on out here with Pete Seeger and Dana Lyons. Dana Lyons actually was at the halftime. The Rivertown Kids, this song was a Grammy-winning peon to Solartopia. And thank you so much, everybody. We'll be back next week.
And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found, but don't you know we're gonna